While visiting County Durham in the northeast of England in August with my daughter to view a horse, we took the opportunity to visit Chris Thompson of Beamish Museum. Chris is in charge of the stables, horses and gardens and has been at the museum for 28 years, while also being married to the CEO, Rhiannon. In recent times, Beamish has become a venue for the attelage events in England and we visited not long after their very successful weekend. We chatted in one of the tea rooms in the town, which is opposite the stables and the pub, which was once connected to the Newcastle breweries. Both Chris and I have an association with the Vaux breweries of Sunderland, and we remember the horseman there, Bob Stoddart, who was Chris's boss once upon a time, and the Nicholson family, who used to own the brewery and have a long association with the coaching club. In the times before COVID, Beamish had nearly 1 million visitors a year, and numbers are actually nearly back there again. On the Sunday afternoon that we visited, it was extremely busy and it's estimated that there were about 6,000 people there that day. And then there's the problem of a very popular Christmas event, which has implications for the wider highways in the area. Enjoy this recording and part two will follow.
Had the horses in the stables, because that yard and stables was built, John Gold was here, John for the sort, but then was built for the Upper Brewery's Firehawk Shorty.
But that, so this has been one of the buildings that's been taken down and built?
The stables, no, but the pub, yes.
Oh, interesting.
The pub is from Bishop Auburn.
Really?
But the pub is not exactly how it stood in Bishop Auburn. It's more or less, not quite. So the pub is an original building, take it down and rebuild it here.
Mm-hmm.
But the yard itself, not as is. Fixtures, yes, from different places, but not the building itself.
Yeah.
And I don't know the exact background to it, but they were going to build a stable left behind the pub.
Yeah.
But Newcastle Breweries were coming out of St. Thomas Street in Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And at that point, I had a Shire team, well, the Cleveland Beer team, which they were provision. And they specified, so originally that was going to be stalls in there, not boxes.
Mm-hmm.
But then they wanted boxes. So the boxes that's in there were not all uniform sizes. They were made to fit into the space.
They are nice boxes. I was just pointing out to Francesca earlier, just the drainage and the way the, I don't know, did you call them, in Aberdeen, we call them classies, like cobbles, aren't they? Just the way that the herring owned it.
Well, that's brick.
Scoria brick?
Yeah, there's some remnants of blast force of it.
Really?
Made in, and they are so hard.
Really?
It's unbelievable, yeah. But they're good sanity wear because you can't wear them out. The only thing is, they're not really the best thing for stables.
So they're slippy. Yeah. Funnily enough, you could see that on the surface. But I suppose you've got enough grooves in there, all being well, they should be okay.
But when you get a horse that's on his toes,
yeah,
the sharp learns to put his feet down. Because he ends up like Bambi if he doesn't get off the house.
Yeah.
I had a girl that had to do exactly that in the doorway between the inner common door and the loose box door. Just went, but, you know, generally they find their feet.
Mm.
So even those big perchoirs go in harness going under the door, which is quite tight anyway, which always make sure they take their time, we make sure they put their feet down.
They can just feel their way.
Yeah. And then we stop, turn them, because the doors are off, they're not in line. We have to come in, turn right and then left.
Yeah.
So they're quite a tricky thing. They're not brilliantly designed, to be honest.
Put up in a hurry. It's interesting because obviously there's a massive connection. You just mentioned the Newcastle Brewery, but there's also probably an even bigger connection with the Sunderland Brewery, with the Vaux family.
Yeah.
And the Nicholson.
Yeah. That came up around in 99.
When did we do the disposal? I should know. I did the auction. I can't remember when we did the sale. It was roundabout then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was a brilliant sale.
When I left school, I went to Vaux in the stable.
So you worked with Bob?
Bob Stobart, Billy Bell, Tommy Greenlee, Eddie Mahoney, Ferret, Derek, Mick Cray.
Bob was such a character. And We ended up getting on quite well. He was a bit suspicious, understandably, because then we swan in as auctioneers from the south and we're selling his livelihood from around it. anyway, eventually got Bob onside. But what used to make me laugh was...
if you got him a bacon and tomato sandwich, you'd get him onside.
I think I bought him a few pints at the morning. Anyway, Bob ended up... he ended up being brilliant. And but they used to put on their posh accents or posh voices for us, because when you'd hear them all talking among themselves, the slang and the language and the words, it was, you couldn't follow it.
So that was when they were in the new stadiums.
Yes.
The new stadiums were across the road.
Mm-hmm.
And there used to be stalls at one side and boxes on the left up in the hands of them. Mm-hmm. And Corp's office was just down from the hand.
Yes, yes.
Then there was the spare sort of harness and bits and pieces in my room tester there, and straight opposite was the drying out room. And when I first started down there, I went in and Bob said, come here, son. He went across. He said, got a penknife? So me being, are you okay? Went, hey, yeah, he says, come here. So he went over with a bucket of water and a toothbrush. He says, go in that corner. And they'd been painting the walls. And he says, see all their marks on the floor? When you get to this corner, you're finished.
The old devil.
Yeah.
But that's how they broke the lads in. Yeah. That's how they saw if you had a day's work in you.
Yeah, yeah.
And those... can't do, employment law doesn't let you do things like that nowadays. I had a similar thing at Thimbleby and Shoreland. The first day's work I had after I went up to, and this is my favourite thing, Noel Abel. My very first day at Thimbleby and Shoreland, Mike Kimber said, come on, we're going up to Thetford. We're going to go and visit a chap, and he wants us to have a sale, Noel Abel. And he had big Tantechnicons and his Clydesdales. And then the next job was to go and set up a sale at David Goody's. Now, that was a penknife job. But I love that. Right, we're going to see what they're made of. We're going to see what, and if you come out on top and breathing and you're all right, it's a fantastic start,
and
isn't it?
Next morning, he shouted over, no, hey, but go again. And he said, right, every morning, front of my office after I've mucked out for the end of the day, he said, then certain turn left into his office and the desk was in front of the window.
Yeah.
And he says, right, go back down there, down the steps, turn left. You went through a door at the back of the room.
Was he?
Straight through, through the next one. He says, when you come out the top, turn left, go straight across the road, because you're in the canteen. So he's baking and tomato. He says, every morning, but they bake the tomato.
So that was promotion that you had to go and get for breakfast. But it was interesting because when they were at the Newstead, one of the reasons that the site was being sold was, I think, a B&Q was going to be built on it. So that was the talk at the time.
Yeah, well, it was numerous things, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, it was going to be a test score at one point.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Because we were pulled in as auctioneers by Henry Butcher because they were selling the contents of the brewery and all the machinery and vehicles and everything. But in fairness, they recognised they didn't have the clientele or the knowledge for the horse side, so we went in, and actually it worked quite well. I did fall out with their director, actually. I can't remember what he was called. He was a hell of a chap, because I wanted a proper Reading carriage to sell smart cattle, and he said, we don't do that, but Henry Butcher's. And I said, well, I don't do that anyway. I've got my own way. I got the coloured cover, and it was quite fun.
Because Frank, the younger brother, did try to stick in it.
Yeah.
Frank did try and take on the brewing side and take some of the pubs and...
Okay, interesting.
Didn't work for him. He couldn't get it,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
over accountants again. Because it was worth X amounts, split it up. And actually, it's a problem. I don't know if you ever read his book, Brewing It Here.
No, I haven't.
Read his book. I mean, it's very, obviously, from his point of view.
Yes.
And you have to understand it about the brewery in Sunderland to kind of get some of it.
Yes.
A lot of people would still be going, really, which I'm not quite sure about, because there's a lot of things that have fell by the wayside since then.
I don't know. I mean, even if you look at the Youngs and the Fullers and things and all our big London brewers down there, it's the freehold. It's the whole system is very different now, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. If there were, I certainly wouldn't think they'd have horses now.
But none of them do. They get them in from David and people like that, don't they? When they need them.
It would be. Unless the Nicholsons were still connected with it.
Yes.
Because that was part of their history and heritage, really. Certainly the poetry side, anyway. But they did also promote, like, the heavy, the restaurants.
Yeah.
That was part of that for history.
Sure.
But his book's really interesting.
I should read
and
that.
And there's a section about him. A little bit about coaching, that when he was the youngest person to take part in a coronation, he was 15.
Okay, probably interesting and, fact. And, yeah.
I remember him telling us one day that they went up in the god, and he watched the ceremony from the god.
So he was actually in, was he? Because the family would have had to provide a something.
His father was obviously one of the coachmen from the Portuguese who drew one of the prime minister or presidents of it was an African nation. It's in his book, I give you a book. So Paul was his groom, his footman. So he's actually in, was it Brian Sean's book? I think there's a photograph of him lined up.
Should have a look at that. It's interesting because there's a lot of parallels between what Sanders Watney was doing in the South in London, you know, with him and then obviously Jim Corbett, and then what the family was doing up here in the north of England. It is interesting. Yeah, it's very interesting. And are any of the Nicholsons still interested in it all now?
Yeah. Well, Sir Paul, obviously, I mean, he'll be tired of that. Right? So he's 73. He's now, he's 82 now.
What?
He's been retired a while, since Jimmy Jeffrey got his phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's still got an interest, but I think, you know, he just catching up. He just took a real back seat.
Yeah.
I don't even know if he goes to coach club meetings anymore. And Frank, he actually came into the museum, it's a few years ago, that was before COVID, for something else, and him and his wife, Lavinia. And I picked them up with it. Well, that girl, Alanda, and he was part of it, with the shadow fang at the end. We were chatting, and I said, how long has it been since your last four horses, Frank? It's been a number of years, anyway. I said, do you want to drive me?
Lovely.
So, took my gloves off, gave him a bowl of hat. He got up, and he went, go on, pets, get on. And they were near.
Oh, how lovely.
And he jogged them all the way around. Because like he'd done it yesterday.
The Gelderlanders ended up here, didn't they, from the coaching team?
Yeah.
And did you get all of them?
We had six originally. Well, initially there was two came across.
Yes.
So when Paul Bennett was here.
That's right. It's all.
We got two. So we got, and they weren't the pet, they were mispaired. We got one out of one pair and one out of another pair.
Oh, that's difficult.
Don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
So one was a dark little chestnut, the four whites, and the other one was a chestnut. Two or three whites come out. Anyway, they went together, they were all right. But then I think that was just like a bit of a make-up.
Yeah.
But it was fine to come over. And then we got the remaining four. So originally we had four loose boxes in the stable. So Paul Bennett and myself knocked out the end one.
Right.
And put a stall in so we could get five in.
So that's five.
We then had to tie two in the biggest box with two stalwarts to get six in.
Yeah.
But then one died quickly after we
got it.
Well, that's it, solved the problem. And then we had an old horse called Nano.
Yeah.
There was a proper character. He didn't last much longer, but to be honest, he was probably at the end of his working life in there anyway.
Yeah.
So he was backed out before, so Paul went up and bought two others.
From Holland?
Yeah. So the same guy who we had always bought from.
Interesting.
Albert van Dijk.
Yeah.
Bought them. One was a leggy horse, one was quite an old fighting sort of square stocky horse.
Yeah.
The Nicholson family were one of the first people to sort of bring Gelderlanders across and use them in coaching teams. But if you look at the photographs of those horses, they were like blighty, larger Welsh cobs.
They were deep, their bow, and they were really deep through the... absolutely.
But stocky feet.
Yeah, yeah. But it's brilliant that right from the get-go, horses have been front and centre here at Beamish, haven't they?
Yeah, from the early days, from the beginning. I mean, because originally there was the town was only partially sort of open. But the farm was open and they've had farm horses, so they've always been horses. In fact, in the very early days, we have a shadow bang in the fortune. It happened to which used to belong to Jack Stamper.
Well, we were gazing down that and we were trying to work out if it was the same one that we'd seen at Smith's Lawn the other day, but it's not.
That's
a different
the Perseverance.
That's a different one because we were looking there going, no, the wheels are a different yellow.
Well, I spoke to Jimmy Tate, who owns that.
Yes.
And Jimmy's Teddy Boyd. Uh-huh. I didn't know there was a Professor Avon's Sharabang assist, because there was a Professor Avon's coach and all that. And he went,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, yes, I bought the Lancashire up. He did tell us that on his name, I couldn't remember. But he said, it's very much like that. It probably is, to be honest.
Yeah.
These were built by masters.
Are they monsters?
Yeah.
Are they? Didn't know that.
And we have another one called Blade and Races.
Yeah.
Which isn't the Blade and Races that you would know with the song. But it was found on the banks of the Tyne River in Bladen, so they called it the Blade and Races. Of course, its serial number follows on from Muirhill.
So they were built in Birmingham?
Well,
it seems so.
Yeah, I mean, the Happy Dears had two caps on,
mm-hmm.
and one of them is Masters.
Mm-hmm.
And the Robert Anthony's being the friends, he did a bit of research and he said he would probably 99% sure they were Marston.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody associates it with Bill Rehearsal, but obviously they built lots more, didn't they?
Oh, they had to, yeah. Yes. I mean, we had, when we did the shore sale, Norman Brown bought it. Was it a really nice Landau by Marstons? I think it was. Because, of course, the Richmond's not a million miles from here. We came up and down for a lot of years to that. It's funny when you recreate all your tracks for auctions. Saw most of it up over the years. And do you feel, with the way things are going, you know, you've got a public interface, and you know, a lot of us that are doing driving or judging, whatever we do, it's, you know, we don't have the public interface. We're doing the sporting and the showing and I suppose countership. You're here with paying members of the public. Has the tone changed for using horses, or are people still bowled over by seeing them and you know, listening to the people in the stable yard? They were just clearly, you know, maybe they've come out of Newcastle or Durham for the day. They just love seeing horses, don't they?
Yeah, no, it has changed, yes.
Yeah.
But being able to see them, no. I think people are still excited about them.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it?
Anything.
Yeah.
If you shed them going to a Shire horse, it doesn't really matter.
Of which you both have got pretty much back.
Yeah. Well, we have everything. We have Shetland ponies, Shires, Percherons, and everything. Most people are not really for the quality.
Yeah.
They can head it, ask its name, ask its age. That's the most common.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
And but they have no concept of how a horse gives you here. So they'll quite happily walk underneath it or shove a pushchair under its nose and expect it to stand still. Well, that's because, like I said before, people are just not used to...
We're a few generations away now from the majority of people being around the working animal or farm animal. You know, each generation gets a bit further away, doesn't it?
And they don't necessarily understand how to be around the horse, even for the handler.
Yeah.
So how we would do things. You did not, you know, think that's strange or why you didn't like that, or like a horse tied up in a stall. It's not, you know, you're being cruel or... Forget most time when you talk, they're fine.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, and some things are not always for the better, but it does change, and you have to think of another way to be around it.
It does feel like, I'm calling it slightly the Black Beauty moment, that actually we do have a greater understanding of what is and isn't acceptable, and are we asking too much of our horses? Well, it's been happened at the Olympics or beforehand. Yeah, I think we all need to have a bit of a rethink, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when we were working the horses in there, Sharabang in Pulse.
Yeah.
We had a maximum of 4 hours worth in a day. But he would, you know, he would stop at each end and we'd give him a drink and what
happened. Yeah, yeah.
Well, what we do 2 hours in the morning, go off for lunch for an hour, and then do 2 hours in the afternoon.
So you're still using a ride?
No.
Or not really?
I haven't done that since COVID.
Oh, really?
COVID stopped that, obviously, with the social distancing.
Yes, okay.
And obviously, out the social distance on a carriage.
Well, you just...
So we didn't do it.
Yeah.
And then... Positive, how we are still in some sort of after effect of COVID. We haven't been based horses in this, I mean, we haven't gone back to doing that. And to be honest, we would never be able to move the amount of people we are getting in on a daily basis.
It's absolutely mobbed. It's like a crowd. It's actually a mob out there. There must be about 300 people in there. Screen queue. It's just incredible, isn't it? I mean, I'm so thrilled that for somewhere that is essentially quite old-fashioned. There's nothing technological. There's no flashing images round Beamish, really. That on a Sunday afternoon in mid-August, absolutely mobbed. It's brilliant.
Cool. I mean, my thought is I'd rather disappoint everybody.
Yeah.
It's disappointing a few.
Yeah.
And what we found was the end of the case, so say we was finished at 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
You'd have a few with vape at 3 o'clock, which then, oh, well, I've waited for X amount of time to get on. Yeah. You just couldn't manage it. So what we have done lately was if we've gone out with proposals, we're just driving. And we're just getting to meet them, we're stopping with the street.
Yes, and, yeah.
And everybody can do that. It's not just a few who get, which is a bit of a shame, but again, it's the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
And if we, of course, we're going to do it every day as a set of pattern.
Mm.
It was kind of, if you came in the world, you would get on, if not, yeah. Then. So it's actually easier to just not offer that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Unless there's an event or a special occasion or yeah. Something.
Yeah.
As a general basis, we will just be anting about.
And what is, because obviously you're going around, you were just talking about the 1950s village, and it's quite an interesting comment that you made that COVID not only did things shut down and you wouldn't have had a person through the door for goodness knows how long, but you said that the after effect of the materials being more expensive, and that's the 1950s village. I mean, what is the sort of the base age that you've recreated? It's sort of Victorian, Lake Georgian, or is it just through the ages?
Yeah. Now it's still the age.
Yeah.
We go from 1820s.
Yeah.
It's a property the wagon was, so early yeah. Steam trains and so
on. Yeah.
And we grew into 1913.
Yeah.
The town, the Holland village.
Yeah.
We then go to 1940s at Home Farm. And then from 1940s, we're now into 1950s.
Yeah.
Town, if you like.
Yeah.
On sort of cinema and, there's a fifty chip shop, the Bowling Green, Age Miners Home, Welfare Hall. So we crossed a lot. But the reason behind that, the reason when Bins was first set up, you need to stay relevant.
Yeah.
You need to stay within people's minds. So initially, we were 1913.
Yes.
So when in 1970, when it started, it was within 50 or 60 years.
So
living memory.
Yes.
Of somebody.
Yes, but okay.
A mother, a father, a grandfather.
Yeah.
Or even the smell that you would associate when you were a child visiting the area.
Interesting, yeah.
So if we'd stuck in 1913, we're getting further away from all these people.
Yeah.
As time goes off. So in the 1950s, we're now in within living memory, or even just the sounds that you can associate. But the smells, if you say, oh, I remember Grandma had one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Shaq, or we love one of those TVs. You know, it's all within that living memory.
So that's sort of the base philosophy, that as long as it's sort of within living memory for something, and I suppose there's a relevance to that, to actually getting hold of items bit by auction, or do people donate items? And
yes. Still, but not in the frequency they used to do
yes.
In the early days.
Yeah.
In the early days, most things were seen as out of fashion.
Yes, yeah.
So things like cast iron fireplaces,
cast iron street lamps. Quite valuable now, yes, yeah.
Nobody wanted them. You know, interiors, they were ripping old doors out, they're putting modern hardwood flat doors in.
Uh-huh.
So they would give you them. Now people have a value, everything has a value. People see that value, they've got programs on the TV. But you still do get donations from people who wanted to go somewhere that which kind of it would fit in or take care of it or be part of something else. So, yes, we do, but not in as much as we used to.
You must have massive stores here, do you?
Lots of different things, although we have to now be selective.
I bet you do. You just can't take ad infinitum, can you?
Because all museums are the same now.
Yeah.
It's the storage facilities and the storage costs that are, you know, as much as the outfront thing, which people don't necessarily see.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of museums struggle with that.
Mm-hmm.
So most museums will now be rationalising when they actually collect and how they collect it.
Mm-hmm.
So for us now, unless we're actively looking for something, so we've just done the 50s, we've got the 1950s objects. So we may have a raft of 1950s washing machines now, where before we had lots of manglers. Because everybody had a mangler.
Yes,
everybody donated a mangler.
That's quite funny.
So, but we won't need any more of those. But if it's something special that we're looking for, mm-hmm. something we know for a bit of history, then yes, we might look at that. We won't just randomly go out there and just...
Well, you don't need to. And there's only so many washing machines any one place needs. Yeah, because Beamish has always been held, and you've got Iron Bridge, and there are a few places in the nation that just have this international reputation, but this is a centre of excellence for what it does. Where does Beamish stand in the museum community broadly?
Quite high, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
In fact, Leanna, the CEO, she's on the European Board of Museums.
Oh, really? Yes.
Each country each year, and they discuss how they're working, what they're going to do, and all that stuff. And a lot of them come to us to say, redo things and take it back.
Yeah.
Yep. We go to them and see. It works weird, isn't it? You think, oh, they come to us because they think we're brilliant, but we pick up things from them because they don't necessarily see what they're doing.
Things,
it's the same, isn't it, really?
It's learning, education, you know, you just can't stand still, particularly when this is essentially a commercial enterprise. There is a business side to it. You still have to get people through the gate. It still has to be a destination,
doesn't it? It is more now.
Yes.
And certainly more since, like, COVID. Mm-hmm. That has to be a business or a commercial fortuitous.
Yes.
Because we have to make money, we have to sustain it. So things like the tea rooms, the fish and chip shops, the sweet shops, the ice cream parlors, they're all money generating. But the costs to run are so high.
I bet they are.
You need to have those things. And we have 400 full staff.
Well, I was going to say, what's the proportion between the likes of you, who this is your livelihood, and then you've got a lot of volunteers coming in as well?
Probably equal.
Really?
Gosh. I mean, it was quite high pre-COVID.
Really?
Dropped off. Staff-wise and volunteer-wise, what COVID time. But it's picking back up. Mm-hmm. We are 400, and I don't know exactly, but 400 or something staff.
That's a lot of people for one site, isn't it?
Well, for 7 days a week, and obviously we only work for 7 hours a week.
Yeah.
We've got to have those back fees.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of office staff. There's a lot of background staff that you don't necessarily see in workshops, the tramway takes a lot of staff.
Well, the trams are fascinating. Watching the trams and the buses, they're all period, aren't they? So presumably you need some pretty nifty mechanics keeping them running, don't you? Because there must be quite an art form keeping them safe. You know, your health and safety requirements are very different from when these were first used.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you took one look at the steps on the tram and said how steep they were. I mean, you just wouldn't build anything like that nowadays,
would you?
Well, you
couldn't now. You wouldn't make the standard.
Yeah.
You know, it's even all modern buses all where you lower the air, don't they, to the front of it.
Well, they do, and everything has to have a fluorescent yellow strip on it and all sorts of things. But that leads me to another question. I mean, obviously, you've brick by brick, window pane, you know, you've recreated these incredible communities here. But what is the health and safety requirement? I mean, you must have quite a lot of accidents with this. I mean, you're saying on a day like today, 6,000 visitors. So what's the annual turnover for visitors?
Well, pre-COVID, we're 880,000 or something like that.
So we're talking nearly a million.
Yeah, well, that was the aim. If you forget COVID, we were aiming to be going towards a million.
That's a lot of people, isn't it?
It's crazy, really, because infrastructure-wise, it's difficult to kind of, you know, cope with that.
Yes, yeah.
And so there's a lot of money to be spent in that alone, which people wouldn't necessarily appreciate, because flushing toilets, you know.
But also transporting them around, you know, using the period vehicles to even get them around, you know, it's balancing the quaint and the authentic with the practicalities of getting people through the place, isn't it?
It is. And we're not quite at that number of visitors after COVID.
Okay.
I think we had 700 and something in last year. So, but we're not
still
far away.
Very, very good, because the world's a very changed place.
And as you say, health and safety is a totally different ball game now than it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we have to change and amend things.
Yes,
and
I bet you do.
It's harder sometimes to do things because you have to meet those requirements.
Yes, yeah.
But you just have to put your thinking caps on sometimes and come up with an alternative for it.
Yeah.
And try not to take it. The key is not to take it away.
Yes.
Because it's quite easy to go, that doesn't work.
Yeah, but there's an alternative way of thinking it. And I suppose this is where being part of a wider museum community helps, you know, talking to what's the Science Museum doing in London, you know, what's happening elsewhere, what's happening in the Louvre, even in Paris. You know, there are similar dialogues surely going on for everybody.
Yeah, we're not alone.
Yeah. Just doing a bit more open air, as you say.
But I think it's across the board, isn't it? I mean, you know, even agricultural stores now, you know, how it operated years ago to now is different. And it'll be different going forward.
Yeah.
So, but for me anyway, and this common sense thing is just, it doesn't exist anymore, does it? It's really. But there is ways to do things if you think about it. And it's okay, it's different, or you might have to do things which take a bit longer, but you can still do it and achieve it. It's just different.
So, 20 years here, before that at Vaux, horses running through your blood, family?
Yeah. I went first pony when I was 4.
How many times did it buck you off?
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day. Nobody worried about saddle fitting things back in the day.
Actually, my granddad bought it for me. He kept it in the garden up beside of the house.
Yeah, well, they were good lawnmowers, weren't they? And they probably didn't get overweight. So that, but you knew you always wanted to be with horses, did you?
No.
No?
No. Didn't have a clue, like most kids, what I want to do. Not a clue.
Interesting.
Left school, had a place at university to go to, well, actually did graphic design, that's what I did.
Did you? Yeah. Did you? Gosh, this is a long way from that, isn't it?
Yeah. So, went, had a place at university to go into art and graphics, and then just decided I don't want to get in debt for the next, such forever long. Mm. Went and got a job. And I worked, funny enough, for Vaux, but in the pub trade with my uncle because he ran Pritt.
Really?
So I worked in there and then ended up with another job through his brother-in-law, which I didn't like. And I just wrote a speculative letter one sort of springtime to Beamish. Got a reply to say they weren't recruiting at this time, but they would give me a call if they were. And about a month later, I got a letter that said they were recruiting, but I'd like to fill an application. Mm-hmm. That's it. 28 years later.
28?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the best thing in the world as an employer if somebody takes the initiative to contact you. It just means they're keen, you know, instead of you going out there. So I think that's always the way forward. If people write and say, I'd like to work, you're halfway there, aren't you?
Yeah. And came as a seasonal. So early type, you have, well, we had a summer season, winter season.
Yeah.
Winter season, honestly, was like a western town with a tumbleweed going down the street.
I bet it was, yeah.
There was hardly any money. Now, we don't have a season. We have a year, but it's not a season. We have still got those as termed as seasons. But when it's busy in the winter, especially over Christmas, as you are in the summer.
So have you gone down the road that a lot of public places have of having Christmas fairs and making it all quite festive?
Yeah, so from mid-November is our Christmas season.
Yes.
So we have a launch of Christmas. Mm. We have five Christmas bases in from mid-November through Christmas Eve. And we have various things to place on site.
Yeah.
And each weekend leading up to Christmas and then the week of Christmas.
Yeah.
So, and then after Christmas, we have 12th night at Poppy.
Oh, but that's beautiful, actually, yeah.
So that goes through and takes us after the new, into the new year.
Oh, how beautiful. Now, that's interesting. And how, I mean, do the horses get involved in that? Because obviously you've got sleighs and things. And
they have done.
Yeah.
And we used to do big Christmas parades and launches.
Yeah.
But again, we've curtailed that.
Yeah.
Because of the notice. Because, I mean, we've had, it's probably on YouTube somewhere, we had a big Christmas launch. And the streets are just lined with people.
Yeah, brilliant.
And we started at the wagon wheel, came all the way in Wales.
Yeah.
On the events field where the turned the Christmas tree lights on.
Yeah.
It was huge. But we have issues getting people into the car park.
Yeah.
Which then blocks the main road. So then we have to curtail it.
Dealing with the highways and police. Yeah, that's the world.
We hope you enjoyed part one of Behind the Scenes at the Museum, recorded at Beamish with Chris Thompson. Part two will follow very shortly.